ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Hurricane Hillary is barreling toward the coast of Southern California, leading to the state's first ever tropical storm warning. Weather officials now warning of life-threatening rainfall and flooding. ABC's Irene Shaw reports from Los Angeles.
There's a lot of prep already underway. People who live in communities that don't even flood are getting sandbags ready to go to divert water. In just the last couple weeks, we saw some hillside homes collapse, and there's a real fear that could happen again.
In Maui, the death toll from the wildfires now at least 114, with 78% of the burned area in Lahaina searched. Hundreds are still missing. A daylight attack in Ukraine in the city of Chernihiv. 7 people killed, including one child, 90 injured. And there's been slow progress in the Ukrainian counteroffensive. U.S. officials now reportedly warning that Ukraine will fail short of a key goal. Recapturing an important southeastern city will not be met, according to officials who spoke to the Washington Post. This is ABC News. Australia's Victoria State has pulled out of the 2026 Commonwealth Games due to cost concerns and will pay the equivalent of about $243 million to event organizers. Victoria's Premier Daniel Andrews saying today the cost could have ballooned to more than $4.5 billion, more than double the budgeted amount.
We could sort of push on and we could deliver these games at a cost of between $6 and $7 billion and potentially even more than that. That would mean that the costs far outweighed the benefits, and that would not be the responsible thing to do. That would not be the right thing to do.
The decision raising the possibility of the games being canceled for the first time since the Second World War. In a city in Ukraine, just about 2 hours north of Kyiv, a Russian missile striking in broad daylight today. At least 7 people killed, including one child, and more than 90 injured. 25 hospitalized, according to local officials. They say the city was hit with a type of ballistic missile, which is difficult to intercept. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The Republicans running for president debate in Wisconsin next week. Before that, they'll be subject to the straw poll at the Iowa State Fair this weekend. With more, here's Mark Moran.
The Iowa State Fair has long been known for grassroots political campaigning. This year's no exception. Republican presidential hopefuls have descended on the fair ahead of the first national GOP debate. Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate says while the politicians' state fair soapbox speeches tend to cater to the Hawkeye State's rural roots, Iowans' voices play a key role in the nominating process nationwide.
We've got a significant responsibility of helping with this job interview for candidates running for president, and we need to take that role seriously, and we need to make sure we're asking the tough questions of candidates, giving the rest of the country a chance to see and hear how they answer it.
The Republican Presidential Caucus in Iowa is scheduled to be the nation's first on January 15th, while Democrats are still finalizing their date. Pate says while the candidates' messages are targeted to Iowans, the issues they discuss in their soapbox speeches cut across geographical lines. Pate adds that being just a few feet away from the candidates allows people to ask questions rather than hearing more well-worn campaign slogans.
You get much more access than you might if it was just a retail campaign where they bought a bunch of radio, TV, and newsprint ads and bombarded you just direct mail. That's all one-sided, one way. This requires them to actually think on their feet.
The Iowa State Fair, which dates to 1854, wraps up Sunday. I'm Mark Moran. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, August 19th, 2023. Thank you for joining me here on Morning Cannolis this morning, as every Saturday morning. This is our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion of those major important stories, news events in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Once again, I appreciate your spending some time with me this hour and perhaps next hour as well. 2 full hours this morning, as always, talking about justice in America, government, and law issues as well. We're coming to you live this morning from the studios of Civic Media in downtown, beautiful downtown Waukesha, but broadcasting throughout beautiful Wisconsin to stations throughout the Civic Media world, welcoming all of you to our discussion this morning. And to do that through the wonderful work, the professional work, the engaging work of my terrific producer, Anya, we're taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 throughout these 2 hours. You can also go on the Civic Media app, find our show, and pull down your particular news station. And you can also text us comments, questions, ideas, perspectives that you wanted to share with me and with Anya this morning on our broadcast. Thank you once again for joining us. As always, we ask this morning, as we do every Saturday morning, 3 important questions. What happened? We've got some big news this past week to talk about. We'll talk about that right off the top of our show this morning. What are the facts? What do we know about what's going on out there in America and beyond? Why are those facts? Why are those news stories important? What is the significance of them? Why are they relevant? Why are they material to our understanding about who we are in America, how we live our lives, what our livelihood is all about? And what should we do? We can't always do everything about the events in our lives, but there are times, especially in these areas having to do with law and government and justice, where there are things we can do, responses we can pursue, answers we can provide. What are our actions to do, to undertake in response to those things that happen that we know are important in our lives? Asking those questions this morning, as always. Our syllabus is ambitious once again, very ambitious this morning, achievable. And it turns out that because of the great number of significant news stories in these areas throughout this past week, that this is the second in the third arc of broadcast where we're talking about the indictments, of course, against the former President Donald Trump. We're going to begin today at the second hour to chat a little bit more about the indictment coming out of Georgia. We'll talk about that right at the top of our show, but then go back today to follow up on the discussion we began last week, analyzing, doing some exposition, actually some readings from this major indictment coming out now a couple of weeks ago with respect to the January 6th insurrection, the attempt, unsuccessful, thankfully, for America to not only undermine but to overthrow the election results of 2020. We're going to talk more in great length about that particular indictment, but we've also got some things right off the top of our show this morning, some rule of law snapshots we're going to share with you as a part of our exposition of these important stories every single week. So lots of things to talk about this morning. Again, always inviting your comments, your questions, your perspectives, and your thoughts here on Morning Cannolis. Let's begin with some of those rule of law snapshots. The two of them right at the top of our broadcast this morning, not having to do with the January 6th insurrection and events both before and after that, the conspiracy to overthrow the results of that election, but instead hearkening back to issues that we have chatted about before on this broadcast. That is violence in America, and in particular, violence that's perpetrated by people with guns to accomplish mass shootings in America. Two significant stories from recent weeks, from early August and then from just this past week, related to guns in America and the horrific effect of guns on our livelihood, our lives, our well-being, our safety and security, not only in Wisconsin, but throughout our United States of America. Let's begin by going across Lake Michigan to the state of Michigan, our partner right across the pond in the great Midwest, and that is the state of Michigan. A judge is scheduled to rule on September 29th, a little bit more than a month from now, on whether Ethan Crumbly should be sentenced to life imprisonment without parole. That is, of course, the harshest punishment available that's in Michigan. Ethan Crumbly, you may recall, is this Oxford High School shooter who pleaded guilty to one count of terrorism causing the death of individuals, four counts of first-degree murder, and 19 other charges. All of that related to what? Related to the November 2021 shooting at Oxford High School there in Michigan. You recall he fatally shot almost at completely right up against them, right at them. Four students, injured seven other people when he was 15 years old. Obviously, Ethan Crumbly today, older than that, but again, pled guilty to those counts of terrorism. Again, all under state law, also four counts of first-degree murder. Over 4 days this past week, Oakland County prosecutors, which is the circuit court, the county court in which this particular case has been prosecuted, it's a state case, it's a criminal case, they're prosecuting and trying to determine by presenting to the judge evidence of what should happen. What should happen to Ethan Crumbly for his horrific events, the horrific things that he did there in Oakland County? Prosecutors and the shooter's defense team, also part of our process, presented witness testimony over the period of the past week or so, and evidence is what's called a Miller hearing. Basically, the Supreme Court telling us if you're going to imprison a minor, someone who is not an adult, you need to show some extraordinary circumstances that would justify that, keeping that prisoner, that defendant in prison for a life sentence without the possibility of parole. So that's what the question's all about. Oakland County Circuit Court Judge Kwame Rowe, R-O-W-E, will now determine again on September 29th, going to announce the decision then, whether prosecutors did in fact meet their burden to prove that a life term is a proportionate sentence for Crumbly. That coming up. Closing argument on Friday, the prosecutor, a woman named Karen McDonald, she's the Oakland County prosecutor, told the court that she had first struggled on the issue, but ultimately determined that the teen should be one of the rare minors in our nation who should receive the state's most severe punishment. That is the imprisonment without the possibility of parole, life imprisonment. She said this. She said, I learned that there has never been an offense or offender like this one, not just in our state, but our country. She said, this is a person who killed four of his classmates, solely for the pleasure of killing and to increase the body count to try to make himself famous. It wasn't impulsive. And their expert even acknowledges that. They're making reference to the defense presentation. And so that determination underway today. Prosecutors pointed out to Crumbly's premeditation of the attack as a reason he should receive this life sentence. They played audio messages in court in which the teen said, I'm going to be the next school shooter, and that he would vow to have so much fun. Defense attorney, of course, also has a role to play in all this. Asked the judge to consider some mitigating factors in favor of a prison sentence with parole eligibility at some point down the road, like his difficult home life and ignored pleas to his parents for mental health treatment and other things. So the defense counsel implored the court to give Crumbly a chance to be rehabilitated and to let a parole board at some point down the road make that determination. And so that happening in Michigan just this past week in the wake of that horrific mass shooting back in the previous year here, as we had indicated back in November of 2021. Another event happening earlier this month in August. This one also related to a mass shooting. You may recall well, facts surrounding the shooting not at all undisputed. The morning of October 27th, 2018, people gathering for Shabbat services, the synagogue, the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and a fellow named Robert Bowers, 50, shot his way into the building, roamed the halls and the chapels, killing worshipers, considered one of the deadliest anti-Semitic attacks in the nation's history. The jury previously found Robert Bowers guilty on 63 charges, 63 separate charges, including dozens of hate crimes, civil rights offenses. Weeks later, the jury also determined that he was, in fact, eligible for the death penalty based upon this. Again, this is a federal prosecution going on in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They disagreed with the contention from his lawyers, from Bowers' lawyers, that mental illness made him incapable of forming a true intent to kill, which, of course, is required to show that, indeed, a defendant is guilty of the offense conduct with which he or she is charged. They had only one decision left, and they made that decision earlier this month, whether Mr. Bowers should be executed or spend the rest of his life in prison for these horrible crimes that he engaged in. Defense and prosecutors made closing arguments in the sentencing issue earlier this month. 12 jurors began to deliberate shortly after 9 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, and shortly thereafter, the jury returned a verdict. Convicting Robert Bowers, again, not only as they did previously of killing these 11 worshipers, but also finding that he should indeed receive the death penalty. The death penalty imposed upon Robert Bowers, again, not a usual thing in the federal system. It requires a huge amount of review internal, not only to the U.S. Attorney's Office in the particular district where the prosecution is being pursued, but also the Attorney General, up and down all sorts of committees and all sorts of offices inside Maine Justice. Ultimately, only the Attorney General can authorize a petition, a request to the court to impose the death penalty. Here, that authorization given by our present Attorney General. And again, the jury, based upon its sequential decisions in this case, its final determination that indeed, under the circumstances of this case, Robert Bowers should be sentenced to death in the federal system. Plainly, a very controversial matter in America, the death penalty. In some states, yes, in some states, no. But in this particular case, finding, the jury did, that the nature of the conduct was so heinous, so extraordinarily violent and horrific, that it is appropriate in the federal system to impose the death penalty upon Robert Bowers. Two events of this past month significant in the life and the livelihood of our nation and the administration of justice when it comes to these horrific events involving guns, involving violence, and the deaths of our fellow citizens in two different venues. We know it continues. We know in America that today, to this point in this year, we've had more mass shootings than we've had days in the calendar year. When we come back, we're going to get back to some other rule of law snapshots, including some specific events this past week related to those January 6 indictments, the other indictments currently presently pending against our former president. And then we're going to go back into our discussion of the January 6 federal indictment. Stay with us for that important discussion this morning on Morning Cannolis.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay, then. Bye.
Hey, this is Penny Pincher Mom, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them, too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Ha, ha, ha! Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
It's so hot. Wait. Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need, only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. At 10, As Goes Wisconsin. Then at noon, Civic Media Network News. On Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
And we are back after that first break here in Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, August 19th, 2023. Beginning our broadcast this morning, talking about these two events in America. One in Michigan related to the shooting there, the school shooting there, and the decision coming up by a circuit court judge there about whether to impose upon the young defendant the term of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole for his killing of fellow students there. And then also chatting about this decision by the jury imposed now by the court to impose the death penalty on Robert Bowers for his shooting of 11 people, his injuring of many, many more at the Tree of Life synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That synagogue, of course, sits in a neighborhood with a rich Jewish history. It was home to three separate congregations, all of which were gathering for services in different parts of that building in that morning. Founded in Pittsburgh more than 150 years ago, the smaller New Light Congregation and the Tree of Life Congregation, both a part of this conservative branch of Judaism. Third congregation, the Dor Hadash, a Reconstructionist, a more liberal branch, again, indicating that this is a place of community, of open doors, and again, of a horrific place in America now because of the terror, the horrific events visited upon that congregation and upon all of us based upon what Robert Bowers did, now facing the death penalty in our federal system. I've had the benefit throughout this past, much of this past year, to have as my at my side my wonderful producer. We talk about her on the air quite frequently. She is terrific, and she supports me in ways big and small every single week. And Anya, I've gotten to know as also a very incredibly insightful, thoughtful person, and she has some comments to offer to all of us, me included, about this Tree of Life shooting and the result that comes this past month there in Pittsburgh. Anya, your thoughts, your comments this morning.
Well, thank you, Jim. And it truly is so sweet to hear you say that because you are so insightful. Our callers constantly talk about it, so thank you for the opportunity. One thing that I feel a lot of places are not covering about this story with Tree of Life is why Tree of Life was selected by this killer. And Tree of Life was selected by this killer because of the fact that it had recently hosted a Shabbat, which is a Friday night, into Saturday morning and Saturday evening holiday that Jews have every week. During a Shabbat service, they had recently raised money for HIAS, H-I-A-S, which is the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which was founded in 1881. And I think it's important to highlight that this place of worship was selected because this person felt that Jews were responsible for bringing immigrants, refugees, people this person found distasteful into this country. So if your heart has been moved by the story of Tree of Life, I would encourage you to look into HIAS. It's been around since 1881. It still exists to help refugees and immigrants. And the same week that they had their HIAS Shabbat, my community in Milwaukee had ours. So it hits close when you know that any of us could have been selected because of our choice to remain connected with this community organization that wants to help people around the world. So it hurts that I haven't heard other outlets cover it, and I just wanted to throw that out there. So back to you, Jim.
Anya, thank you so very much for that insightful perspective on this story. Again, lots of aspects here to this. Undeniably, Robert Bowers, motivated by hate, by a sense of the other, and again, specifically, as you indicated, selecting this particular venue, this place of service, this place of engagement, this place of humanity, for a purpose. And not only do we stop him from doing that, we send the message, as Anya, your important words say this morning, to other people, that if you do this kind of thing, not only is it intolerable, we talk a lot about the importance of language and conveying that, but you will be stopped. And in this case, because of the things that he did, the federal government has decided through the process of justice to impose the death penalty upon him, making that selection, as Anya said, for a reason, for a purpose, targeting this particular community, this particular congregation. Anya, thank you so much for that insight, that perspective. As we continue to talk, as we will down the road also, about not only guns in America, but these kinds of things, identifying people who are perceived inappropriately, wrongly, as the other, as people who are not a part of our community, and the responses that we should and necessarily need to pursue against all of them. Anya, thank you so much for that. Promised this morning that we would chat about some other what I'm calling rule of law snapshots, but all of them come again in the wake of the big news story this past week having to do with the return of an indictment, another indictment, the fourth criminal indictment against our former president. We're going to talk a little bit about that and then move to these other snapshot stories that are also related to these four indictments and other matters pending against our former president. And then, as I said, in the latter portion of our first hour, into the next hour, we're going to return to that January 6th indictment that we began to talk about last week, this important and charging document coming out of Washington, D.C., alleging federal offenses against a singular defendant. His name, of course, is Donald John Trump. We know that just this past Monday, a grand jury sitting in the state of Georgia indicted Donald Trump and 18 other people named in the indictment in this sprawling racketeering investigation, this sprawling racketeering charge, if you will, multi-pronged effort described in this indictment to overturn the narrow election loss in Georgia that he suffered in 2020. He's now facing, as we well know, four separate criminal charges. This indictment laying out the most broad set of accusations against the former president, 13 counts, including racketeering, making false statements, and pressuring public officials to violate their oath of office. Among those charged in this 41-count indictment, the culmination, again, of this about 2.5-year investigation in Fulton County, led by the DA there, her name is Fani Willis, also involving the former White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, and a great number of lawyers, which we're going to talk about at some point down the road as well, including Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, Ken Chesbro, Jenna Ellis, and Sidney Powell. All these lawyers, once again, involved in this. When we come back after this break, talking a little bit more about that, and then providing some other information about big stories this past week before we get back to that January 6th indictment coming out of the Federal District Court in D.C. Stay with us for this important discussion.
Summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom and Crude. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Hurricane Hillary is barreling toward the coast of Southern California, leading to the state's first ever tropical storm warning. Weather officials now warning of life-threatening rainfall and flooding. ABC's Irene Shaw reports from Los Angeles.
There's a lot of prep already underway. People who live in communities that don't even flood are getting sandbags ready to go to divert water. In just the last couple weeks, we saw some hillside homes collapse, and there's a real fear that could happen again.
In Maui, the death toll from the wildfire is now at least 114, with 78% of the burned area in Lahaina searched. Hundreds are still missing. A daylight attack in Ukraine in the city of Chernihiv 7 people killed, including one child, 90 injured, and there's been slow progress in the Ukrainian counteroffensive. U.S. officials now reportedly warning that Ukraine will fail short of a key goal. Recapturing an important southeastern city will not be met, according to officials who spoke to the Washington Post. This is ABC News.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in Amory.
A crash in Polk County killed 2 people yesterday morning on Highway 8 about 6 miles north of Amory at 114th Street. 2 vehicles crashed head-on when a car going east crossed over the center line and hit a truck going west. The drivers of both vehicles died at the scene. There were no passengers in either vehicle. The number of people killed on Polk County roadways is now 8 this year, according to the sheriff's office. A man is dead after running a stop sign and crashing into a semi-truck in St. Croix County Wednesday night. The sheriff's office said 22-year-old Junior Carranza Guerra of Clear Lake was driving west on 200th Avenue when he didn't stop going onto Highway 63, where a northbound semi crashed into him. The man died at the scene. The driver of the semi was not hurt. It's the 6th death on St. Croix County roadways this year. And the high school football season got underway last night. Baldwin-Woodville defeated Kewaskum 54-21. Menominee downed Rice Lake 21-12, while Glenwood City upended Oliva Strom 47-6.
For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
If you care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer in Wisconsin, and the success of your efforts often depends on knowing the forecast. Count on your local Civic Media weather team for all the information you need.
Crops' roots are also growing deeper in search for water, which is bad news, because when rain finally falls, it will sit shallow and be absorbed in the top layers of the soil.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the app.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We are back this morning. It is Saturday, August 19th. This is Morning Cannolis, and we're spending much of our first hour talking about various stories coming out of the rule of law environment in our nation. Right now, chatting about this major 4th indictment against our former president, Donald Trump, coming out of Georgia. The state prosecutor there, Fani Willis, coming out of Fulton County, and a state grand jury returning this massive indictment against Donald Trump and others for their involvement in trying to undermine, to overthrow the election results in 2020 there in Georgia. Recall well that Fani Willis, the DA there, is looking into whether Mr. Trump and associates there violated Georgia law, and particularly bringing this charge under RICO, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, a state law that also has a federal parallel law to it as well, basically saying that you've got an enterprise, a criminal enterprise of people who've gotten together for a common purpose, sort of like a conspiracy, but again, under state law, alleging that their common purpose here was to once again interfere with the counting of votes, the proper election, the voting in Georgia more generally in this sprawling indictment, did various things along the way, all of those set forth at great length in this indictment. And what brings them together again is this common mission, this common purpose to accomplish fraud in Georgia. And that's what brings it together under RICO. a statute often used in the past, in years past, to go after so-called mobsters in our nation, but used more and more to identify enterprises of a white-collar nature, including this, when you've got this, again, consorted group of people, this enterprise put together, brought together, coming together to accomplish some inappropriate criminal and illegal criminal result. That's exactly what she is identified here in that indictment. This investigation, of course, began shortly after this recording was released, in which Donald Trump was talking to Brad Raffensperger, who is the Georgia Secretary of State. That was happening on January 2nd of 2021, well over 2 years ago. And you may recall well that during that call, Donald Trump insisted that he won the state of Georgia in the election, made baseless allegations of fraud, which are also a part of the indictment, even though multiple recounts confirmed that he had lost. And Trump told Raffensperger at that time that he wanted to find, that is, Trump wanted to find 11,780 votes, one more than he needed to win Georgia and its electoral college votes. No doubt, Georgia, among six other states, including Wisconsin, a lot of focus of the former president and now the named co-conspirators in that state case to try to reverse the results of the 2020 election. Over time, we became clear that this investigation in Georgia, like the investigation in the federal system as well, also pursuing false statements that lawyers made for and on behalf of the former president in state legislative hearings there in Georgia, a meeting about 16 pro-Trump Republicans who cast these bogus or false or fake electoral college votes for him, much as they did in these other states, including here in the state of Wisconsin. There was an intimidation campaign against a pair of Fulton County election workers. We will talk about them in a future broadcast as well, falsely accusing them of fraud, changing their lives, exposing them to the possibility and the terror, if you will, of people who are going after them because of these allegations, completely unfounded, that they engaged in some kind of voter fraud there. And a successful effort by some Trump allies there in Georgia also to copy sensitive software. An elections officer we haven't heard a lot about before in rural Coffee County, Georgia, about 200 miles away from Atlanta. All of that in this massive, huge indictment coming out of Georgia this past week. Again, alleging election fraud, forgery, false statements, impersonating public officers, soliciting public officers to violate their oath of office. This pro-Trump electors scheme, conspiracy to steal votes, this voter data, again, in Coffee County, and the harassment and intimidation of these election workers. We know them as Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss. They testified as well before the House committee looking at all of this, too. Mark Meadows, as I said before the break, significantly among those people who are specifically named in this indictment, charged in this indictment, and a lot more to come, including in our next broadcast next Saturday, an in-depth review of exactly some of the stories, the accounts that animate those charges, the RICO charges and the many other charges in that indictment. Donald Trump himself, again, charged in 13 different charges in that document: solicitation of violation of oath by a public officer, conspiracy to commit forgery, conspiracy to commit false statements themselves, conspiracy to commit impersonating a public officer, and conspiracy to commit filing false documents, in addition to this major count, the violation of the Georgia RICO Act. And again, a lot of discussion, a lot of in-depth review of exactly the stories, the accounts in that, again, speaking indictment. We're going to talk about in our next broadcast and invite you to tune in and be a part of that discussion then. In the wake of that, what has happened? What has happened in Georgia in the wake of that indictment announcement of earlier this week? One of the things that regrettably is not only contrary to the rule of law, but is becoming more commonplace, I would offer in large part because of the statements being made by our former president in the public domain about the things that should happen to people who provide evidence, who come before a grand jury, who provide information to a trial jury, witnesses, other people with relevant facts that prosecutors and investigators have to sift through to determine whether or not there should be charges. And sure enough, just this past week, we have learned, as late as yesterday, not only are there threats being made against Fani Willis, the DA in Fulton County, plainly trying to intimidate her, trying to get her to stop this prosecution. That will not happen. That will not happen because not only is she committed to this prosecution, but the reality is that just by stopping a prosecutor alone, individually, does not prevent a case from going forward. But second, just as concerning as that, if not more concerning, threats against the very grand jurors whose names are under Georgia law released in the public domain, threats against the grand jurors who returned this indictment, who did their job, who came in, the people from the community who listened to the months and weeks and great number of hours of testimony, reviewed documents, did their civic duty, threats now brought against them as well, likewise being investigated, their addresses, their home addresses, posted on social media, again, as an attempt to intimidate them, to send messages to people down the road that if indeed you do your job, you do what you need to do as a citizen, we will go after you. And where does that come from? The allegations of misconduct, completely unfounded, against these good people, against the prosecutor, and also by the Fulton County Sheriff, Pat Levatt, who's also there, also getting threats as he is planning for the initial appearances by Donald Trump and other defendants there in Georgia. All of these people now the subject of threats and threats of violence against them, wildly inappropriate and in and of themselves can, in fact, form the basis, certainly for federal charges, state charges as well, under Georgia law. What do we know about what has happened in particular? And what is the story that comes out of one of those attempts, not only to address what's going on in Georgia, but also a similar threat made by a Texas woman against the judge who's presiding over the federal case. This is not the Georgia case. Now, the federal case that we've begun to talk about also alleging a four counts against the defendant, Donald Trump, in that federal indictment pending in the District of Columbia. Texas woman, again, presumably taking up once again the invitation by our former president. He posts on social media about a week or so ago. He says, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. That's the invitation. That is the invitation that Donald Trump sends to America, which in and of itself is not only a threat, an invitation to that kind of behavior, but should be the premise for not only additional review by the presiding judge, but also the basis for criminal charges for threatening witnesses, threatening people who are involved in this process. This past week, a Texas woman, her name is Abigail Jo Schry, S-H-R-Y. She lives in Alvin, Texas. Was charged with threatening to kill Tanya Chutkan. She is the federal judge in Washington who's overseeing Donald Trump's prosecution again in this federal case, seeking, again, criminal remedies against him based upon his efforts to overturn the 2020 election, kind of the parallel case that we're talking about there in Georgia. Again, Abigail Jo Schry. She called Judge Chutkan's chambers on August 5th, 2 days after Trump was arraigned in that federal case on the election interference charges. And she left a voicemail attacking the judge, who is black, with a racial slur, according to a complaint that was filed and released just yesterday. And in the message, Ms. Schry told Judge Chutkan again, very much at the invitation of our former president. She said this, if Trump doesn't get elected in 2024, those are also the that regrettably are being hurled at the grand jurors, at the law enforcement authority under our engaged office in Georgia as well, because of the legitimacy of the process in which these people are under are engaging right now. You know well that last week Judge Chutkan addressed this very issue. She warned Donald Trump that she'd take measures to ensure that he did not make inflammatory statements about the case in a way that might intimidate witnesses. This exactly what happening, otherwise harming the integrity of these proceedings. The federal agents, in the wake of Abigail Schry's hurling this threat to Judge Chutkan, went to visit her, as they always do, about 3 days after she left that message. And she admitted she had called the judge's chambers She told the agents that she had no plans to go to Washington, D.C. or to Houston, the area that one of her representatives represents. She had also filed and submitted and hurled a threat against her congressional representative at the same time. She said that if Sheila Jackson Lee, who is that representative, comes to Alvin, then we need to worry, according to that complaint. Significantly, again, the sense of deterrence out there, the message conveyed by what law enforcement does when you engage in threats against people who are involved illegitimately in the law enforcement system. What happens is Ms. Schrey yesterday was this past week denied bail, ordered to be held in custody for 30 days following her detention in Houston. Significantly, Ms. Schrey's father, Mark Schrey, testified that she was a nonviolent alcoholic, those words, who sits on her couch daily watching the news while drinking too many beers. Mr. Schrey told a judge in Texas that she often became agitated by the news, started calling people and threatening them. That, according to the complaint, they're coming out of South Texas. That may well be the motivation, the intent, plainly, is to threaten. It is appropriately responded to by prosecutions, by apprehensions, and by bringing those people into the federal and state criminal justice system as a way not only of deterring them, stopping them from doing these things in the future, but also deterring others who would, again, take up what is undeniably the invitation of our former president, now facing these four completely separate but related charges in various jurisdictions, alleging crimes against the people of various states, New York and Georgia, and crimes against the people of the United States of America as well. If you go after me, I'm coming after you. That kind of behavior, that kind of conduct itself, from my perspective, should not only result in a clear and unequivocal response by the federal judge, but could itself be the premise for yet more charges as Donald Trump continues to do this attack socially in public social media against the people who are prosecuting him based upon his conduct. And so let's talk more about that as well. We know that in the wake of that indictment, of the January 6th event, more events happening with related to the prosecution there in Washington, D.C. John Eastman, again, and others also prosecuted in Georgia. John Eastman, one of the attorneys in the Georgia prosecution, he wants to be severed from the others. He says basically that because he was less culpable than the others identified, the other 18 in that indictment, his case should be tried separately from the others. This happening, John Eastman, at the same time, he's facing a disbarment trial in California. Prosecutors there indicating that they are not going to suspend that trial in California, even while the case is pending against John Eastman and others in Georgia. When we come back, a little bit more discussion about other things coming out of Georgia, coming out of Washington, D.C., and then a return to our discussion of the January 6th federal indictment out of the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C.
Hey, this is Penny Pincher Bob, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Here's your updated forecast. A heat advisory begins at 1 p.m. this afternoon and continues until 9 p.m. tonight. Mainly sunny skies this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 91. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows level off around 63. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Daytime highs approaching 82. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 72.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. WLAK.
And we are back this morning on Morning Cannolis. My name is Jim Santel. We're spending much of this first hour talking about various rule of law snapshots, almost all of them, not exclusively, but many of them related to the charges now pending against our former president in four different cases, two of them federal, two of them state, principally, but not exclusively, involving the events of January 6th. And right before the break, talking in particular about this latest indictment of just this past week coming out of Georgia. It is a state criminal prosecution, this sprawling indictment against Donald Trump and 18 others involving, among other things, RICO charges, racketeer-influenced and corrupt organization, a variety of different kinds of packages, pockets, if you will, of prosecution units in that case. Bonnie Willis telling us after the indictment was returned a couple of things, and that is she anticipates that all of the 19 defendants will make their initial appearances there in state court, as they should, prior to the end of this month. Donald Trump indicating through his counsel that he will likely surrender and, yes, in fact, be booked and perhaps even a mugshot taken of him for the first time in any of these cases. The feds have previously declined to do that. That's probably going to be happening this coming Thursday or Friday, the 24th or 25th, and all of them, all 19, coming in to get processed. The sheriff, again, indicating that he is going to treat all of these defendants just like any other defendant would be. That is the way it should be done. No special consideration for anyone. Not treated worse, not treated better than anyone else in our federal system, our state system. That is going to be happening this coming week. We know, in addition to that, other events having to do with these other defendants in that state prosecution. Fani Willis indicating that she would like to bring them all to trial fairly soon, on about 6 months or so. And March 4th of 2024, she would like to bring all of the defendants into state court. She has indicated she'd like to try all of them together. We'll see whether that happens. And indeed, as I said, we've already got a request from John Eastman, perhaps others, to be severed from the others. That will probably happen for a variety of different reasons, perhaps including various pleas entered by some of the defendants as they recognize that their exposure, many of them 5 years, more than that, up to 20 years in prison for some of the things that are charged in that indictment. In addition, we've got others who are indicating, including Mark Meadows, they'd like to transfer the case from state court into federal court. Let's talk about that for just a moment or so. Highly unlikely that will happen. There are circumstances where a state prosecution can, in fact, be transferred into a federal venue, typically in the civil area, where it's determined that the underlying events, the underlying activities by defendants who were a part of the federal government acting in their scope of their duties and responsibilities, that those should be prosecuted in federal court because of the nature of their duties. Things done in the scope of their employment, duties and responsibilities kind of under cover of their federal responsibilities. Here, unlikely that will happen. Why? Difficult to maintain that these kinds of things that are alleged in this state indictment are things done in furtherance of a legitimate government pursuit of duties and responsibilities. Beyond that, even if it were to move into federal court, it's not as if the case changes. Fani Willis would then be prosecuting this case in federal court. Different courthouse, different location, but same charges, simply in a different venue. Again, highly, highly unlikely that will happen. Will almost certainly remain in the state court where it should. That's where the interests of the people of the state of Georgia are best vindicated by virtue of this state prosecution against Donald Trump and the 18 others, including people like John Eastman and Rudy Giuliani, and yes, Sidney Powell and Jeffrey Clark and Kenneth Chesbrough. Kenneth Chesbrough, one of the people also named with particularity in the Georgia indictment. He and some of the others identified as unindicted co-conspirators in the federal case in Washington, D.C. But here in Georgia, Fani Willis and the grand jury that returned this indictment based upon probable cause to believe that all of this has happened. Here, we got some additional information about Ken Chesbrough. He's identified plainly in the indictment as one of the major movers and shakers, identified as a co-defendant along with Donald Trump and the others for all of these acts, also charged with the RICO violation in that case. And up to now, there's been an awful lot of analysis about the so-called suits versus boots, kind of a casual way of describing a very serious matter here. Those people who are in charge of putting together the overall scheme, the conspiracy to bring people together to undermine our election, the people who might be sitting behind desks putting together memorandums and protocols, all illegal to try to overturn the election results of 2020. Those regarded, again, sometimes as the suits in these enterprises. And the boots, the people on the ground, the people who actually stormed the Capitol on that day, about 1,000 people now under either investigation or prosecution, many of them convicted to this point. The boots on the ground. And there's always been sort of this divide. And the question has always been, gee, is there a connection between, is there a clear connection between those people who organized this and put it in place, put together this multifaceted scheme, which again is a part of the federal investigation and federal prosecution, and also set forth in the Georgia prosecution as well. Is there a connection between those people who organized this, came together to draw the strings and make the tendrils between their organization and the people brought to Washington, D.C.? Well, there was some significant information about that just yesterday. It came through the nature of some videotape showing Ken Chesbrough. Ken Chesbrough, again, one of the six unindicted co-conspirators in the January 6th indictment federally, but also named with particularity among the 19 defendants in Georgia. We've got videotape now of Ken Chesbrough, who, again, one of the principal authors, as we will hear again in our second hour, of this so-called Wisconsin memorandum, other memorandums to put together the fake electors scheme and otherwise try to get Donald Trump to remain in power in the wake of the 2020 election. He is certainly one of the lawyers who is at the core of this conspiracy, this scheme, as Fani Willis describes it, as a RICO violation. He's walking around. He's walking around on the grounds on January 6th. He is there at the time that the others, hundreds, approaching 1,000 other people, are attacking the Capitol and moving in. No indication that he himself went inside the Capitol. There may be an indication he was in a forbidden area, if you will, a place where people should not have been that day, which could be a low-level charge against him. But it's the first time we've got a connection, again, between him and the people that he was associated with, including the former president and others, and actual people on the ground. We see him in the company of Alex Jones there on the grounds of the Capitol. And we also see him plainly in the company of many other people there on the grounds of the January 6th assault on the Capitol that day. Why is that significant? It shows once again this linkage between the lawyers and the violence, the people who put this together and the people who perpetrated it on January 6th. When we come back, after our first hour break here, I'm going to talk about one other matter related to the January 6th prosecution, and that is the Proud Boys. And then we're going to go back to that major grand jury indictment in the federal district court. Stay with us in our second hour coming up here on Morning Cannolis.
With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of what we do in government always is political. It has policy impacts. It has political impacts. But if your raison d'etre and your organizing principle is that my guy wins and your guy loses, the entire country suffers. That is not our call to serve. That is not what we raise our hand and say an oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic ABC Media.